It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee, Andy, and Lori are all here. We will prepare with questions for Tim Cook's congressional testimony tomorrow. We'll talk about the App Store killer features in iOS 14 and somewhat less killer, and why Apple TV Plus seems to be struggling. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. Mac Break Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 724, recorded Tuesday, July 28th, 2020. Renee's beautiful mug. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Molecule. Molecule is reimagining the future of clean air, starting with the air purifier. It's not just an innovation on existing technology. It's a scientific breakthrough in air purification. For 10% off your first air purifier order, visit molecule.com and enter the code MACBREAK10. And by Cashfly. Give your users the seamless online experience they want. Power your site or app with Cashfly CDN and be 30% faster than the competition. Learn more at twit.cashfly.com. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. The Mac Break trio has assembled. Alex Lindsay is on assignment still, but Renee Ritchie is with us from youtube.com/Renee Ritchie. Hello, Renee. RR.
Hi, Leo. I will try to do my best to make up for the technical geekery that is Alex Lindsay, but there's just no chance. There's no way.
He's still doing his office hours, I know, but I guess he...
Yeah,
he
I did it with him the other day. It was a lot of fun. I suggest anyone who's
interested,
go check it out.
Yeah, that's great, yeah. Also with us, Andy Iannocco of Washington, WGBH Radio. I don't know why.
They should be so lucky.
Boston Public Radio. Yes, they should be so lucky. IHNATKO.com. That's his motto, I think. They should be so lucky. That'd be good. That'd be a good motto.
It's going to be on his gravestone.
In the appropriate, like, Mel Brooks old man accent, though. They should be
they
so
should
lucky.
They should be so lucky. We are lucky because Lori Gill is also here. She is a managing editor at iMore.com. Hello, Lori.
Hello.
Did Apple have an quarterly results? No, it's Thursday.
It'll happen on Thursday. Yeah.
This week.
Yeah. After the testimony.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, because normally, don't they do it on Tuesdays?
Yeah.
Usually, they have for a lot of times,
So maybe they are waiting.
But the thing is, it was supposed to be Monday, but they had to cancel. Yeah. The Congress decided to postpone it until Wednesday because of a very, very distinguished personality who, legislator and legend, who is now lying in state.
Yeah.
But
John Lewis. So... tomorrow, if this is Tuesday, it must be tomorrow. Tim Cook.
What day is it?
Yeah, you know, it's easy to forget these days. Tim Cook will testify before the House Judiciary Committee on Antitrust, along with Jeff Bezos, Sundar Pichai, CEO of Google, and Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook. The first time,
but not Satya Nadella, which is curious.
Yeah, not the Microsoft guy.
No.
It is an interesting pick. It's the first time I think Bezos has ever testified in front of any congressional committee. Tim's been there before, right?
He could buy the country. He's got like over $100 billion now. He probably just bought the Capitol building and wants to check it for drapes or something. That's why he's there.
Yeah. Or he could do like what the Hollywood studios do. They fly the entire committee like to a luxury resort on a junket, and like do it at a place of his choosing.
Have Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie give them canapes while they're going over.
To be serious, it does show what a big deal this is. Bezos has always ducked this. He's always found every possible excuse to get out of it. Zuckerberg could be talked into it. But this, let's remind ourselves that this isn't just like election year. I really need some footage of me behind a microphone on a level higher than the 100 billionaire wagging my finger at him. This is a pre-announced like multi-year investigation into antitrust all across the tech industry that is buttressed not only the federal level, but also at the state attorney general level. So if these CEOs do not find time in their schedules, they are going to encounter increasingly hostile panels.
Although the cynical view is that they agreed to do it because it's all four of them. And they believe that because all of their positions are under investigation, but are so different, that having the spotlight on all four of them prevents it from being on any one of them.
So Ben Thompson at Stratechery wrote some sample questions, but today he tweeted about a New York Times article. Their businesses went virtual, then Apple wanted a cut, talking about Airbnb and ClassPass. ClassPass began selling virtual classes because of the pandemic. Apple tried to collect its commission on the sale. And Ben highlighted this sentence from the Times article. Apple also pointed out that Airbnb had never paid Apple any money, despite the fact that it built its million-dollar business with the help of its iPhone app. Now, you can interpret that as Apple proudly pointed out, we never asked them for any money. Although they, you know, there is this rent-seeking bit of Apple's App Store business where, Airbnb built a business and now has a new business, and Apple says, yes, we'd like 30% if you want your app to be on the store.
Yeah.
See, YouTube takes 45% from me, so.
Right, yeah. Well, you don't know, do you? Does YouTube tell you what it takes?
Yeah, I believe it's 45%.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's not. I know you weren't making a direct comparison, but it still is a good idea to point out that basically you are mailing them like a high definition video cassette, and they're agreeing to like stream it to the entire world in perpetuity, and also sell ads for you. Whereas Apple is saying, I always think that Apple's being a little bit coy here, because they're also saying that if all these other companies said, "Gosh, we're sorry, Apple, we're sorry that we offended you by not paying you enough money," Airbnb and Uber and every single app that people rely on, we've decided to stop abusing you by stop supporting the iPhone and make people use web apps to connect to our services instead. I mean, Apple needs these companies as much as they need Apple. And also, given the testimony we're talking about in front of the House on Wednesday, they also need to be able to demonstrate that they're not just some sort of a racket that's saying that, first of all, you're not allowed to have a presence on our platform unless you sell through our store. And also, you are required to conform to whatever terms we dictate for use of the store.
So it's an interesting, the article from the New York Times picks these two because they're unique situations. ClassPass, which before the quarantine had a business helping people book exercise classes at local gyms. A feature Apple
controversially,
but Apple didn't charge them for that. Yeah. Then ClassPass obviously had no business after gyms closed, so it started shifting to virtual classes, charging for those, paying that money on to the gyms, not all of it, because the classes it sold on its iPhone app were now virtual as opposed to real classes. Apple says we want 30% of the sales
Than Amazon and Kindle, right? Like Amazon.com purchases have to pay Apple nothing, but if you buy something for your Kindle or Comixology, they expect their 30% cut. This is why these articles to me are so painful. It's like
Apple, in its defense, says this is a 10-year-old rule we're enforcing, and if we waive the commission, it would not be fair to other app developers that have been paying that fee for 10 years for similar.
So the thing for me is
businesses.
That, like, in good times, nobody really cared about the 30%. It was a gold rush. People were making money hand over fist. You saw articles about this game making $1 million, and there were App Store millionaires in the headlines all over the place. And it was objectively a more convenient arrangement than the previous web stores for online software. And it was better rates than they were getting, or at least the same rates that they were getting on those web stores, and way better than retail. And nobody cares what slice of the pie someone else is getting when that pie is growing so fast. But when that pie starts to constrict, for some reason, we all switch from, hey, how do we stop this and start growing the pie again, to, hey, why don't I get more of your slice of that pie? And it seems like both Apple and some developers, not all developers, but some developers are both saying, hey, that 30%, we want more of it. And Apple's saying, hey, you're not giving us that 30%. And it doesn't address the root issue. None of this stuff does. Like, I was joking about this on Twitter, but it's not a joke. I talk to developers and they say, if Apple would just do what the Google Play Store is doing, it'd be fine. And I say, well, why don't you use the Google Play Store? And they're like, I hate it. And like, that's just not a defensible point of logic. It's Apple.
Well, I don't really think the reason people are not in the Google Play Store is not because they hate it. The reason is because the Android device users apparently are not as likely to pay for stuff. And so
there's much less copyright prosecution.
There's much
more
revenue in the Play Store, in the Apple Store than there is in the Play Store. Airbnb analogous situation. They were offering, in fact, have been since 2016, in-person experiences, guided tours, bar crawls, cooking classes. Of course, pandemic ended that business. So they started selling virtual versions of the same experience. Apple said, okay, now you have to give us money. Now, apparently Apple now claims, even though ClassPass says this isn't the case, that ClassPass has been given to the end of the year. ClassPass said they wanted it now. And they say we're still negotiating with Airbnb. But of course, Airbnb is big and Apple might have the clout to negotiate. Apple says if they don't pay, we're going to pull their app entirely.
Yeah.
So go ahead, make your point now, Renee. I just want to make sure we've got the facts of these two situations.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of legitimate complaints, like not allowing trials on the store, whether that 30% should be 10% or 15%, whether there should be alternate stores, whether they should support full progressive web apps, you know, as an alternate, all these different things. But none of those address the root cause of this. These are, I think, people rearranging the deck chairs. It's just that so much of the software is now commodity that I think it requires a complete reimagination of what a store should be. It's a decade old. And I don't think Google's far behind on having that same problem. We went from scarcity and highly expensive apps to abundance and apps that people get angry about when they're only a dollar. And we have to address, and that's not unique to apps, but they've become just the next form of content we have to address that point.
Here's one more story from the New York Times article, and it's Proton Mail, the encrypted Swiss email app. Their chief executive, Andy Yen, said, if you're not in the App Store today, you're not online. Your business cannot function. So they're the gatekeepers of something every single company wants. But if you're going to go through those gates, they're going to charge you 30%. So what Proton Mail is, they began charging 30% more for subscriptions bought on the iPhone app versus those bought on the website, to, in effect, passing Apple's fee on to the customers. But Apple's rules prohibit Proton Mail saying there's a lower price on the web. And when Proton Mail did that, Apple restricted its app. Then when the company instead tried to make it clear that 30% of the subscription price went to Apple, Apple again said you can't tell people that and restricted the app again. So there are two issues. One is Apple seems somewhat capricious in the enforcement of these rules, and that's a big issue. I'll channel Alex Lindsay, because you know last time we talked about this, Alex was very adamant in his defense of Apple. He said they've created the iPhone, they've created this store, they've created immense value. This is the cost of doing business. You're riding on Apple's value. If you want to ride on that, you don't have to. You can go in the Android store, but if you want to ride on Apple's value, you got to pay the ticket. And so, you know, I'm not sure I agree with that, but I'll just give you Alex's point of view. What's wrong with Apple saying, look, we're providing this value. This is what it costs. How about you, Lori? What's your thought?
There's so much to unpack here. So, I mean, you can look at it from Apple's perspective, which is exactly what Alex Lindsay would say, which is we have provided this value and the fee for our value is that you pay 30% of your profits. That makes sense from a business point of view. The bigger and more important your company is, the more leverage you have to make sure that you continue to like make that growth happen for you. From the developer perspective, I can see, and I think this is where like Renee was saying, people didn't complain about the cost before and now they're complaining about it. I think what that more than anything comes down to is that when the App Store first started, it was just an app. You know, so developers, they made an app and you bought an app and that's all you bought. You bought this like piece of paper, right? Now people are selling services. They're putting services on the App Store. So now you can, you know, you can go rent an Airbnb or you can take an in-person, have an in-person experience. Now it's turned into a virtual experience. This isn't just one app that you know, you charge $1.99 for, knowing that some percentage of that is going to go to Apple. This is your entire weekly, monthly, daily livelihood. That is now 30% of your entire income for your life goes toward Apple, not just one purchase. So I think that's part of why there's a lot more complaints going out, is that it feels more of an effect because it's not just developers creating apps that we buy and 30% of it goes to Apple. It's now, I created an app. Apple doesn't want 30% of that. That's a free app. It's the fact that you can, you know, take a scooter down the street that Apple wants 30% of. And that's where things get a little bit weird, and where I do think Apple needs to make some changes into how it deals with that kind of thing. Like, for example, just an average standard subscription to Netflix, let's say, it starts at 30% at the beginning, but then goes down to 15 or 10% the longer that app is in the App Store. And in terms of services, I think something similar should also be in play here, which is at first, you're a brand new customer, you have to give us 30% of that, but then over time, that percentage goes down. That to me just makes it makes sense in that apps usually get their biggest push right when they first come out, you know, so that's where a lot of money is made, is right up front when all of the marketing gets talked about. And two, Apple should consider, and they don't have to, but just for society's sake, they should consider moving toward reducing how much they take from companies as those apps are in the App Store.
Apple has been willing to kind of change its rules over time. They were first publicly published in 2010. In 2018, Microsoft came to them for Minecraft because they wanted to make sure that users who were able to buy bought my Minecraft subscription years ago on the website from Mojang, should be able to use Minecraft on the App Store. Phil Schiller gave an interview to Reuters today, kind of, I think, to set the tone for tomorrow's testimony for Tim Cook. Kind of these are the talking points. He said to Reuters, as we're talking to some of the biggest game developers, for instance, Minecraft, they said, "I totally get why you want the user to be able to pay for it on device, but we have a lot of users coming in who bought their subscription or their account somewhere else, and it's a big barrier to getting into your store." So Schiller said, "We created an exception to our own rule because we thought, yes, that's reasonable." Here's the kind of the money quote from that Reuters interview. This is Phil Schiller. "One of the things we came up with is we're going to treat all apps in the App Store the same. One set of rules for everybody. No special deals, no special terms, no special code. Everything applies to all the developers the same. That's not the case in PC software. Nobody thought like that. It was a complete flip around of how the whole system was going to work. I have to point out that there are exceptions. Amazon famously just got an exception, as has a French broadcaster and another broadcaster. So they do make exceptions sometimes. Amazon's a pretty big customer. Amazon has a variety of deals with Apple. So maybe it isn't a completely level playing field."
And maybe this is just not the right, you know, the right way to do it. It's, you know, this is an experiment in this, you know, even though the App Store has been around for 10, 12 years, however long it's been around, it's still an experiment in figuring out how to do it right. And just because Apple decided not to do it the way PC software did it doesn't mean it's the right thing to do.
That's,
like, maybe go
point.
Back to the way PC
point.
Software did it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's important to be a sort of ever-changing, you know, way of doing things and listening to your clients and making decisions based off of that. Like, on the one hand, the iPhone is you know, hugely popular. And just like that article was saying, that you can't be a player app developer without being in the App Store. But in the reverse, one of the reasons why the iPhone is so important is developers and what they brought to the Apple community. If it weren't for the App Store, an iPhone would be just like an Android.
That's
phone.
A very good point.
So
Airbnb has created value too on their own that they are bringing to the iPhone.
And I think a little give and take is important to keep this going. It just makes the most sense from both perspectives. It just helps both companies. You know, Apple shouldn't be treating the developers as if they're some sort of, you know, you're writing our tailcoats. That's not what's happening, because Apple is getting its value from the developers too.
Ben Thompson tweeted that he believes, or this is the point he's been making, Apple believes it's entitled to all commerce that happens on an iPhone. Is that a fair characterization?
He was arguing with Benedict Evans about that in that same thread. Benedict Evans goes, no, you are quoting that backwards.
You misinterpreted
that is saying,
it. Yeah.
Yeah, that is saying that they let all that stuff go. They don't believe that they're entitled to it. They just believe they're entitled to digital goods.
Yeah. In the Reuters article, they quote Mark Fisher, who is a chief executive of a mobile technology firm called Dogtown Studios. He said in the Reuters article, Apple's 30% commission felt justified in the early days of the App Store, when it was the price of global distribution for a then small company like his. But now that Apple and Alphabet's Google have a duopoly on mobile app stores, fees should be lower, possibly the same as the single-digit fees payment processors charge. As a developer, you have no choice but to accept Apple's charge. But maybe there is room. My guess, Apple's going to play this strong hand. They're going to get Phil out there. They're going to Tim Cook tomorrow. It'll be very interesting to see what he says. But it is my guess, Lori, that they will negotiate, that in the long run, the outcome of this conversation will be Apple giving in some respects. Go ahead, Renee.
I was going to say, there was this great post from John Gruber where he put up the old headline from the G4 Cube, and it says Apple puts the G4 Cube on ice. And, you know, they never did. That was like the old Apple, and they never did that for AirPower. They didn't say Apple pulls the plug on AirPower. It sort of let just everybody report it.
Right.
But that, as much as Steve Jobs was intrinsic to the App Store, like, when you read those original App Store guidelines, you can tell Steve wrote them. He was just having nothing. Like, he was abiding no nonsense in those guidelines. But it does feel like one of those things that Apple should just take a step back from and say, is this the best experience we can provide? And it's objectively not. Like, it's resulting in a lot of frustration for Apple, a lot of frustration for developers, a lot of attention from regulators, which is never a good thing, because these are often the worst, technologically least astute people in the world. And their remedies are often not very good, not very well suited for the realities of the industry. So my hope is that Apple will do what they did with, like, the Mac Pro or some of the other products, and just, you know, today Apple reinvents the App Store, and there's a bunch of new policies that are not only much more palatable, but are better for everybody.
Yeah, they're gonna take a victory lap, basically. It's funny, because I remember that headline, Apple puts Power Mac G4 Cube on ice, because that was Apple's own headline on their own press release.
Yeah, it was so good.
That I read that press release the day I had bought a G4 Cube.
Oh, of course.
That's when it all began.
That was the inciting incident with Giulio.
Oh, July 3rd, 2001, a day I shall never forget.
Live in infamy.
I love my G4 Cube. Mine never cracked. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. Ben does write on Stratechery some questions for the CEOs he thinks Congress should ask. Can almost guarantee Congress will not ask these intelligent questions from Ben, but more likely, how do I post on Facebook?
Or why is my tweet being taken down for lies just because it's all lying lies?
Yeah. Yeah, that will come up, because Twitter today suspended Donald Trump Jr.'s account for posting a clearly bogus COVID-19 video.
Well, bogus and dangerous.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
Tim Cook, these are the questions. Actually, you know what? Let's take a break, and then I'll give you Ben's questions for Tim Cook. And then we can talk about what you think Congress will actually ask tomorrow. You know, it's going to be worth viewing. It's going to be worth seeing. You don't get to see those four on a panel all at once ever. So it'll be very interesting to see Tim Cook, Jeff Bezos, Sundar Pichai, and Mark Zuckerberg all on stage.
Don't you wish it was Walt and Kara doing the questioning just for all time?
So much better. So much better. Though it's challenging to think of how you can, in a reasonable amount of time, talk to all four of those guys. Each of them should have their own hearing. It's crazy to say, let's just get these.
And because the issues are completely different. Like why Apple needs to be regulated is very different than why Amazon is very different. Google and Facebook, some crossover, but they're all mostly different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apple's not going to be asked about election interference.
No.
No.
Our show today brought to you by Molecule. I love our Molecule. We have one at home. We have one at the office. Actually, we have two at home because after Lisa and I got the Molecule for our bedroom, our son Michael said, I need one, and he has one too. And here in the studio, this is really where the Molecule shines. Indoor air, when there's no windows in this studio. In fact, there's no windows in the office entirely. It's all a sealed office, as many offices are these days. Indoor air can be up to 5 times worse than outdoor air. That's according to the EPA. And Molecule has done something to reimagine the future of clear air. It is not an air filter, per se. It's not just an innovation on the filter technology. It's a different way of purifying air called PECO, photoelectrochemical oxidation. And what it does is it actually traps pollutants, very small pollutants, volatile organic compounds, viruses, bacteria, mold. It traps them and destroys them. It's pretty cool. Molecule air purifiers are designed to protect homes, businesses, even medical spaces, so you know they're destroying pollutants and providing clean air. In fact, the FDA has just cleared as a 510K Class 2 medical device the Molecule Air Pro RX. That's the medical device they put in hospitals, in doctors' offices to destroy bacteria and viruses in the air. Same PECO technology. Actually, they have a variety of molecules for every need. The Molecule Air Mini for smaller rooms up to 250 square feet. The Mini Plus, which helps protect small rooms with a particle sensor and auto protect mode. Fan speed adjusts as needed. We have the big molecule, the Molecule Air. We love that guy. That's everywhere that I go. With so many more of us spending time at home, clean indoor air is more important than ever. Molecule's PECO technology meets the performance requirements in the FDA guidance for use in helping reduce the risk of exposure to SARS-CoV-2, that's the COVID-19 virus, in healthcare settings. That's how it got that 510K Class 2 medical approval. For the whole home and beyond, Molecule now offers its breakthrough PECO technology across a really broad range of products, providing clean air everywhere you need it. Pick the unit that's best for your space. If you're medical office, take a look at the Molecule Air Pro RX. Or you can create a discounted bundle that help protect your entire home, office, medical or dental practice, or a business against pollutants. I feel like it's important for our employees. We want to make sure, since we are in a sealed business, that this isn't one of those sick offices you hear about. We actually got the Molecule originally because of smoke in the air from the fires. And we know we're getting into fire season soon. I'll be hanging out here, I can tell you. 10% off your first air purifier order. Visit molecule.com, MOLEKULE.com. Enter the code MACBREAK10 at checkout. That's molecule, MOLEKULE.com. Enter the code MACBREAK10. And if you want to know more about the technology, there's a lot of information on the website, including scientific studies from a variety of sources, including Department of Energy labs, university labs, that explain how it works and why it works. And, man, I'm a believer. Molecule. All right, here are Ben Thompson's suggestions. This is a really good one. Mr. Cook, do you believe Apple has been adequately compensated for its role in making smartphones the most indispensable devices in people's lives? Does Apple deserve more revenue from app developers, including those offering free apps? That's kind of a backdoor way of saying, well, do you think they owe you money? Do they?
That's not begging the question. That's seducing the question.
It is. It's very.
that's begging for a free Mac Pro. That's what that's doing. Yeah.
Tim, we really love you and everything you've done. But there's a little needle in there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Saying, do you think you deserve every penny?
I read it as, do you really think you're that important that you deserve that much? That's how I read it.
I agree. And I think what Ben has done, he's very smart, is he's writing the question in a way that's going to make it very hard to dodge.
It's a honey trap.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then he asks, why doesn't Apple simply charge developers directly? Oh, this is an interesting idea for the cost of running the App Store. Hmm. Instead of saying 30%, let's just say, here's what it costs. Here's how many downloads. Yeah. You know, here's 10% for marketing or whatever. That's it.
It's like an AT&T text bill that Justine got back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, admittedly, that'd be complicated for Apple to impose, but.
Well, yeah, and they're paying taxes in Japan for developers and stuff. It's really, it's a complicated agreement.
Yeah. I don't know, also, though. I like this because it, you know, if Apple's going to play this game where they're saying, like, we are completely, everybody pays the same across the board, this is a way to do that. It's like, here, you know, every single developer, you pay $10 a month, period, no matter what. Like that, you know, that fits more in line with their idea that everybody pays the same, you know, like there's no question about it. Whether your app is free or paid, whether your service is inside or outside, you pay the same amount. Like that fits that kind of, you know.
And even a sliding scale might be unnecessary. If Apple could just simply open the books to some extent to explain, here is how we're justifying 30%.
Yeah,
30%. Because for some developers that might be too low, for some developers that might be too high. We just don't know what does. And as Renee said, it's not a hard number to nail down, because what's the cost per unit of electricity? What's the cost per unit of storage on this particular month? I think the biggest problem that Apple is facing is simply that if Renee gets sick and tired of how he's being treated by YouTube, he can go to Twitch, he can go to Facebook, he can go to any other different streaming platform and get it. I think that your star shines so bright in the firmament that we could put it anywhere in the sky and we would all cluster around it for light and heat.
So Apple did commission a study, and they released it last week, also preparing for Tim Cook's appearance tomorrow. The study from the analysis group basically concluded that Apple's store prices are in line with other digital marketplaces. Here's a quote. The commission's,
that's like the least interesting thing about it, right?
I know.
They picked to compare against. Well, that's illuminating.
But it is one defense. You know, I think Apple's going to defend it along a lot of different lines. But one line is, hey, we're not doing anything anybody else isn't doing. Most app stores charge the same 30%. Retailers, travel booking services, other marketplaces often charge even more. Yeah. Distributing software through an app store is less expensive than distributing through brick and mortar retailers. By the way, no one's done that in about 15 years.
You didn't get your copy of Tweetbot at Best Buy, Leo?
And in fact,
I think there's one Blockbuster still.
Ben points that out. He said the study that doesn't even mention direct to consumer sales over the web. And it says, in fact, that's one of the questions for Tim Cook. Don't you think
that's there was a lot of console
viable?
Positioning, like, because Xbox, Nintendo, and Sony have the closest model to the App Store, where it's, you know, it's 30% and you can only distribute through them, and it's all. I think Apple is cozying up to the platform model hard in some of those places.
Yeah. They're ignoring the fact that Apple was the first in the market with this kind of an app store. And when they set 30% as the price that people are willing to put up with, it's not as though it had competition and the price got driven down to 12%. It's that everybody just simply decided that, okay, that seems to be the standard amount. So I don't think that report.
I remember they were asked that, and as impossible it is to believe for those of us here, apparently Nokia invented the first app store in 1812, and it was also 30%.
Okay, well,
Ben Thompson also says they should ask, why should apps installed by the app store not be allowed to link to a web page if that web page allows users to sign up for a paid service?
Ben has a very interesting solution to this. Like, he believes that if Apple just allowed that, like just allowed the alternate payments, that it would make all of these problems disappear. And granted that a lot of people has, like, if they just allowed sideloading, but this to me sounds like a very reasonable solution because it protects the trust relationship, the security, the review process, everything. And I don't think Apple would stand to lose that much because they would be forced to compete on convenience, which still is a, and some people just don't trust those processes. Like, I'm not going going to give my information to some wacky website. I'm using Apple Pay.
That's exactly. Even Apple brings that up specifically, and I'm sure Tim Cook will tomorrow, that we're providing security. We use Apple. We have a payment system. So we provide a payment system, which normally costs people money anyway. And we provide the privacy and security our users want. And I think, you know, if they said, you can buy it here, it's convenient, it's easy, it's one button, or you double tap, and you bought it, and it's secure, and you trust us. Or if you want, here's the link to the web store. Good luck.
Yeah, and by the way, I don't think it would hurt them. I think
the price would be this. You could mandate that the price is the same, right?
I think that would be harder for the store. Like, I also think it doesn't have to be, like, because you're – it's
– Well, if I'm going to pay 30% less if I buy it on the web. I'm going to do that.
Well, but I think that's what forced Apple to radically rethink those margins, like that cut, if it was an open competition for the business.
Oh.
But I think that solves everybody's problems.
Good point. But it would cost Apple in the long run, wouldn't it?
If they make a great service. I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like why I'm so happy about default apps on iOS, because like I'm not using Mail because I have to. I'm using it because I want to, and that means that Mail team better work.
Right. Why he says, why can't Spotify and Kindle link to their web pages for purchases? Does Apple Music or Apple Books pay a 30% charge on every purchase? If so, how is that charge accounted for? If not, why would Spotify and Kindle have to pay Apple 30% on in-app purchases? I think, and then he goes on with other stuff. He says, for instance, iOS 14 is going to allow users to change the default web browser and default email client, but why not the SMS client? I doubt very much the senators will be asked.
That wouldn't work.
Members of Congress
will be asked. If I was him, I'd ask the music client, because the SMS client's not really workable, but the music client certainly is. Yeah.
Why does Apple allow WeChat to have a store-like interface for mini apps, but doesn't allow Facebook, Microsoft, Steam, or other U.S. companies to do it?
I mean, I wonder if they really hope that none of the more litigate, the younger, more tech savvy, more litigation savvy Congresswomen in particular and men don't reach their tech degree.
Well, you know, just, I mean, those questions will be brought up.
Yeah, because we're joking around about this, but this isn't like 90 minutes. So like this isn't on the big stage at a tech conference. This is they got them all day. This could go into the early evening. Also, this is at the end of over a year of investigation and subpoenas of requesting and demanding documents and interviews of people. So yes, there are going to be people who are going to be grandstanding. Yes, they're going to be asked, you know, what is it that why do you hate freedom so much, Mr. Zuckerberg? But there's also going to be
I just can't make money off of it.
Yeah. Like the big pucker moment is going to be the question that begins in October of 2011, sir. You had a meeting with the following.
Well, it's going to be interesting. So here's who's on the committee. Jerry Nadler leads it, of course, the Democrat. And there are a couple of you mentioned the Democratic women, Pramila Jayapal, Val Demings, Mary Gay Scanlon, Lucy McBath. But on the Republican side, you've got James Sensenbrenner, you've got Matt Gaetz, which is going to be interesting because he's, of course, one of the members of Congress who's been most actively criticizing social media for its anti-conservative bias.
There seems to be like a lot of these politicians on both sides. When you see them interviewed, they are so calm, so rational. They seem to have all their logic sensors in force. And then you put them in front of like a news camera at a Capitol, right, and they say the most outlandish things. And I honestly don't know which one of them are going to show up on any given day. It's such a whiplash. I can't imagine having to like have your lives depending on a lot of these people.
Welcome to America.
Well, they can do both. They can do service to the party and be good little soldiers, but they can also ask the pointed questions that result in this specific legislation being put through 2 years from now.
The questions to Amazon, Google, and Facebook will be much more pointed than they will.
Well, I think there's so many problems with Facebook that if they waste it on why are you biased against my anti-vax, but
you know,
friends,
Matt Gaetz
it'll be horrible.
You know that Gaetz will totally do that.
It's sad.
Yeah,
I mean these people they're doing such egregious thing. Like we saw that whole study come out where Facebook knew that if they pushed extremist views, they would hurt people but make more money, and they chose to make more money. And I want them asked about that, not about why like fragile people who say bad things and get their posts taken down, or you know, it's heartbreaking.
If you look at the market cap and the value generated by these four companies, this is, these are obscene. Huge. And, you know, in a way, you know, $5 trillion market cap for those four companies, annual revenue close to $1 trillion, $773 billion. They have $420 billion in cash.
That's just Bezos' take-home.
Yeah. So these are immensely powerful companies. And while on the one hand you might say, well, that's why we've got to regulate them, on the other hand, you could also say these are the engines of the U.S. economy.
That's the danger here. That's what happened with Microsoft. That's why I'm so scared here, because the U.S. administration tends to favor low prices above everything else. And we saw that with the eBooks case. We saw that with Microsoft. The EU tends to favor competition, and neither of them seem to have a balanced view or an astute understanding of the nuances and subtleties involved. And it really is a sledgehammer approach, which is why I think these companies are just out of their collective minds to let it get this far.
Mm. Well, what choice do they really have?
Well, they could be a little more conciliatory. Yeah. They could
or a little more like I think Twitter might not be the perfect example, but I think there's a lot of stuff that Zuckerberg could do just for the sheer betterment of humanity that would also put him on the right side of regulators. And Apple could rethink the App Store, and you know, Amazon could decide not to be terrible to the people who work for them. I mean, there's a lot of things just morally, ethically, beyond avoiding regulation that they could put in plan that would also happen to help them with regulation before it gets too far.
This is a big lose for a lot of different people, especially because the one big win, the one big relief for these four guys is that because of coronavirus, they get to do this remotely. They don't get to have that picture of like them lining up in their suits, being sworn in, being photographed everywhere, just like the banking industry was forced to do, just like the tobacco industry was forced to do. It makes them look a lot less like arraigned criminals.
Remember all the heat the big four automakers got when they flew their private jets to Washington, D.C.?
Don't wait for the translation. Answer the question.
Yeah.
That's such a powerful moment.
Yeah.
Have you no decency, sir?
Speak long into the machine. Oh, no, that's another one.
Don't wait for the translation. Well, answer the question.
I forget who it was, but it might have been AOC. It might have been somebody else who was just skewering Zuckerberg. Like, he was sitting there looking paler and paler and sweatier and sweatier, and they were just drilling down into his soul. And those are the kind of moments we won't get, because I'm sure his Zoom call will fail, you know, whenever it has to.
Yeah, no, I'm serious. I mean, if I had powers of teleportation and invisibility, I would love to see. I'm not joking here. I'm sure that each one of these CEOs is going to be chatting in from something akin to a soundstage, where they've built like an office set, just like iJustine has, just like all these other streamers have. They have the fake like house, but on the other sides of it, there are going to be 24 people who are just there with big pads of paper and big iPads to like write down, like, I see where this is going. Here's a piece of data that you need.
Oh, is there a lawyer in frame with them? Like, how do they do the pause? Hold on. It's like, how do they?
That's really interesting. I don't know. I haven't
because that's what you need to get to wait on the clock, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, they can hit the mute button, and maybe they can also do like, and so, Mr. Zuckerberg, given this that you are actively trying to bring down our federal government by these sworn statements, what have you to say?
Like, sir, you're on mute.
I think you're muted.
Sir, you're on.
So much you're muted, sir.
If you watch these delightful cats, we'll try to fix this.
I will be watching this. I'm not sure
Mr.
when.
Mr. Zuckerberg,
this...
you have the puppy dog ears layer on. Can you turn off the puppy dog ears?
your tape is still on your camera, sir. Your tape is still on your camera.
When is the test?
I think one of the most frustrating parts of watching these things is how the people in charge of trying to figure out whether or not these companies are doing right or doing wrong are so they don't understand technology at all. And that from a consumer's perspective, it's very frustrating to see, like, you're not asking the right questions. You're leading down the wrong path right here. You know, this person just said something that you should ask more questions about, not just skip over and move on to the next thing. There's so many times where I wish that there was like, like a second person there with the officials, with the government officials, who was more tech savvy.
So that's the staff. And those staff members are over their shoulder feeding them questions. And I think probably in every case, the staff has given these guys questions. I don't know what the format is. I don't know if it's that 5-minute format that they've had in the past.
But remember last time there were like tech support questions, like my grandmother tries to reboot her iPhone.
These guys might be a little savvier. Well, I hope.
Yeah.
I think young Congress people are the savviest.
Yeah. So let's hope. So you said noon. Is that noon Eastern, Andy?
Noon Eastern time, I can't understand.
I might have to come in early just so we can watch along.
Are you going to stream it, Leo?
I think we might have to go to C-SPAN and stream along. I don't know. This is really. I'll come in here and we'll start it. John,
if you and Micah do it with hats, I will definitely be with you.
Oh, you're in floss. Yeah. Okay.
The real stories are going to come out about this on Thursday, not live on Wednesday, because there's going to be this is an opportunity to get the shot of asking the serious question and getting the immediate reaction. But it's also, again, hours and hours and hours of essentially laying lines of bait that they're going to be following up on in 2 or 3 months later.
Well, and remember what happened with Mark Zuckerberg. At least 30 or 40 times he said, I'll have to get back to you on that. I'll have And I suspect we'll see that strategy again as well.
Should the be capitalized in Facebook? I'll have to get back to you.
Yeah. that's why it's tough for like people in our business, because as usual I'm going to be downloading the video. I'm going to be in VLC, like playing it back at double speed, so I can make sure that I'm paying attention for 3 solid hours instead of hanging in for 7.5 hours. Because again, it's going to be the names you haven't heard of, and something that when no one's paying attention, a very, very simple question with a very, very off-putting answer that results in, again, new legislation a year and a half ago.
I think some of the members of Congress are pretty sharp and will be asking sharp questions. David Cicilline of Rhode Island is pretty savvy on this. He's been very critical of Amazon.
Yeah.
I don't think this will be like the previous Senate testimony. I think this might be a little bit more productive.
This is Bezos's first appearance before Congress. Everyone else is at least a 2-timer, I think.
Right.
Or 1 or 2-timer. And this is, I mean, I totally agree with the guttural reaction of Renee that in all the conversations about huge companies that have an immense amount of power and not necessarily a great deal of responsibility in how they wield it, I mean, Amazon is definitely it. And even if we decide to skip ahead past all the labor abuses and we talk about why is it that every time anybody wants to buy something, the first website they go to is Amazon just to find out what's available, and how are they going to defend themselves against the idea that No. I know it's incredibly valuable for us to not only see who's buying what, but what they were looking at before they decided to buy what. And yes, I know we're now creating our own brands in order to compete with other things that are available in our store, but we're not abusing our position in order to do so. Yeah, we're going to trust you on that. Thank you very much.
Go
ahead.
I was going to say, it'd be interesting to see if anyone plays the card where like, oh, you know, the more you regulate us, the bigger advantage you're giving Chinese companies. And is that really in your national security interest? Do you really want to weaken American companies right now? Are you sure about that? And the whole thing is just so many different layers of.
I also wonder how much they're going to focus on Bezos, given how important this particular appearance is. And maybe there'll be perfunctory questions for the others and then just go now let's get down to what we really want to know from Jeff Bezos, especially because of Cicilline, who's running the show on this. It will be streamed on YouTube. There's a House Judiciary channel on YouTube. Who knew? You can watch it live there again noon Eastern.
Please like and subscribe.
Hit the red bell.
I remember, pound that like button just like I'm gaveling you. Raise your right hand and slam it on that like button.
It's going to be challenging. Actually, Ben had an interesting graph in his article where he shows how popular these companies are. These are not, these are important brands. And this is Google's number one with the this is from Vox Media. The Verge Tech Trust Survey from last December, Google 72% positive rating, Amazon 70%, Microsoft 66%, Apple 62%, These
we're all out of our minds.
Facebook's a little lower. Facebook has a 40% positive, 35% neutral, 25% negative. But those big three, Google, Amazon, and Apple in there, are extremely popular companies with the American public. So, again, a challenge to handle this.
I don't know whether this is an unprecedented business situation or a totally precedented situation. I have to go back to when every single industry was based on steel and steel were conglomerates, or every time someone had to move from point A to point B, they had to go with a trust based on the railroad and the urban transport trust.
Coke and Pepsi own everything, Andy.
Well, the railroads, I doubt there was a lot of love for U.S. Steel, but the railroads are a good analogy because people have got real benefit from the railroads. And I'm sure that the railroad barons face less scrutiny because...
And the telecommunication companies, we all love them.
Yeah, right.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it's just that people are capable of not trusting the power of individual CEOs at Google and Facebook and Twitter and Amazon and even Apple, while also saying, don't you dare take away my Google Maps. Don't you dare take away my Google Docs. Don't you dare take away my one ability to do anything to Instagram. That means I can no longer see pictures that have been sent to me by my nieces and nephews.
It would be imprudent to do so now. We're more reliant on these companies than ever. But not that Congress doesn't.
I just wish that their risk, this has got to be built into their risk assessments. Especially these are big companies; they're not stupid, and this has got to be built into their risk assessment strategies. And there's got to be something that's telling them to hold the line on this, even when it looks like folly to people like me or us or whatever. I just wish I knew what it was.
Also, they might be a lot of different management teams are in a position where, if there is a change of staff at the executive branch of the United States government, a lot of our problems could either A, go away, or B, very so totally different that we're going to wish that we had waited until October, November, December, January 20-something to make any offers of what we're willing to do to avoid being legislated.
Virgil in the chat room sent me an article from 2013 when Tim Cook appeared before the Senate.
Yes.
And received the headline is, "Senators turned Tim Cook's hearing into a genius bar visit." Questions like, why the hell do I have to keep updating my apps on my iPhone all the time? Why don't you fix that? That was John McCain. Why don't you fix that? Carl Levin of Michigan said, "I have an iPhone in my pocket. I have an iPad right here. My granddaughter even knows how to use it. All of it." So, but again, that's the Senate where I think they tend to be a little older, maybe a little less tech savvy. I think Congress.
It's not Microsoft and Intel up there. And if you'd said that 10 years ago, nobody would have believed you.
Yep. Yeah. Good point. Yep. When Senator Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire greeted Tim Cook, she said, "So nice to meet you. I have an iPad." Claire McCaskill says, "I love Apple. I love Apple."
And there was a ringer switch thing too, wasn't there? Where someone was complaining about the ringer switch. The whole thing was just, I wanted to cry.
I think this would be different.
Just think about 12 to 13 months of them demanding documents, interviewing people.
Yeah.
not just simply having I'm glad you brought you in, and now can you have Steve Jobs autograph my iPhone? No, we really can't have him do that. this is going to be a focused thing. It's not going to be over and done with. This is the third step towards a five-step process of each of these companies probably having to concede something major.
Rumors,
the U.S. Congress.
We can move on. Rumors starting to appear about iPhone 12. I don't know. I always go to Renee Ritchie to vet those. Are any of these rumors worth paying attention to? Or
so, I worked in this industry for 10 years. My delightful colleague, Lori Gill, still works there. And I understand that news is hard right now. But I look out of the landscape and it says, leak confirms iPhone 12, Apple September event. And I look and it's a Twitter account that has never tweeted before, that has an animoji, an anime picture as its icon, and just says things that are either patently obvious or so far outlandish, and it gets an entire article like on 8 different sites. And I just I get it. We're all super bored right now. But I think you should better prepare people for, like, this is a zany Twitter account that's just tweeting stuff and we're desperate, and not, oh, my God, this is what the next iPhone is going to be.
Japanese site Mac Otakara says there might be a delay for the iPhone 12 to late October due to COVID-19 hitting the supply chain. That's I don't know how well sourced it is, but it's not hard to believe.
But then there's rumor that the Apple event will still take place when it usually does in early September. That's just when we see the phones won't be.
And they did that later. With the 10R, right? They announced it, they showed it, and they said, and you'll get it late October.
And the 10, the difference,
the difference this time, though, is that normally when they have a September event, it's
something
a week or 2 weeks later, something is in people's hands. And in this case, if they actually do a September event and they don't postpone the event a month, we're going to see, you know, the announcement and then a delay, which I wonder, is that a good idea? Because part of why we jump out and buy these new iPhones is that they just had an announcement that following Friday, you can pre-order it. The following Friday after that, you get to see it's in your hands. There's that kind of excitement that happens right away. So I wonder, you know, is it from a marketing perspective, is it a good idea for Apple to have their September event like they always do? Or is it smarter to postpone the event until they know that they can ship those iPhones 2 weeks after that event? That, to me, that makes the most sense.
It's a virtual event, though. Like, that's the thing with these all these things. It's a virtual event. They could very well have planned. They have the iPhone event the exact same week on the exact, like, Tuesday of the exact same week every year. It's not like rocket science to predict when the next one could be. And in a normal year, that could absolutely be the event. But when it's virtual, they can hold it anytime they want. And we saw with WWDC, it was 3 weeks later than it usually is. And that they could just say, this is what we're going to do. We're not going to have any more air power nonsense going on. That stuff stopped. And when we know what's going to ship and we know when it's going to ship, we're going to have the event 2 weeks before that. And these are all the ways we're going to work with people who aren't there in person, but we still build excitement. Like, that to me smells like Apple. It doesn't smell like Apple to go, okay, we decided, you know, 3 years ago, this was the date and we're just going to do it because we decided it.
Right.
It's hard to say, though, because I don't think any company is as much of a control freak about their marketing as Apple is. And the great thing about
they
having
wish
those
they
in
were.
Person. Well, no, did I mishear you? They're total control.
Other companies wish that they were as good as Apple at being so tight about it.
I don't mean it that way. I mean that they like having absolute control over every step and how information gets out, who gets it, how these people release that information, make sure that they are being, I wouldn't say influenced, but make sure that if there are any mistakes in coverage or if anything that Apple assumed was going to happen as a result of this doesn't happen, there's going to be a course correction there. And it makes their jobs a lot tougher because there's certainly the great things about having those in-person events is that you have the 3 or 4 different layers of handholding that go on there. And also the other X factor here is that I don't know if I 100% believe that Apple's going to show off at least Apple Glass sometime before the end of the year, but how are they? It's the sort of thing where it's very, very hard for them to stream a video of someone using this and communicate without live audience reaction, you know, how interesting this is and what the message and what the story is behind this. Yeah. And also this is also the sort of thing where, oh boy, if you got like a whole bunch of training before you got to a pre-release iPhone with a new feature on it, imagine they're probably going to put you into like 2 week, forget the coronavirus quarantine. They're going to put you in Apple Glass quarantine where you can't leave the hotel for 2 weeks. so you have a personal butler enforcer. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's going to be a really, really tough thing. Because that would have been like, it would have been almost like the iPad introduction, where all you want is as an Apple PR person is get all these people into the demo room and let them scroll, let them squeeze, see how well how light this thing is and how durable it feels like when they don't have the ability to let these people who are going to be the first round of influencers, the people who are going to do the, hey guys, I got my first full hands-on in-depth review here in the demo room where I have 2 minutes with this thing. Mm-hmm. But all this sort of stuff where people are saying, I know I don't have them yet. I know I don't have a full review, but even for the first 2 minutes of this, I can tell this is something different and something special. There are a lot of variables here. This is the slogan for 2020. This is a unprecedented situation, and we can't really predict how anybody is going to get through anything.
Mm-hmm. Apple announced last month at the virtual WWDC that they were going to allow Find My to work with other companies, but now the Washington Post has
This was the dumbest article.
I'll let you puncture this.
I don't know how I got out of fact check.
Let me tell you what they said. They said they have a secret Apple document that says that there are some limitations to what third parties can do with Find My, chiefly, and it's a 50-page PDF, which no one's read except the Washington Post, chiefly it's put restrictions on how consumers will be able to use the app. Apple customers who use Find My to locate a device will be barred from using other competing services simultaneously.
So that's a really ignorant way of explaining. Like, I'm not usually this angry about articles because I figure they're just insane. But this is the same thing we saw happen with HomeKit, where there was like 2 years of bashing articles. And it turns out the whole reason was that because accessory makers were upset, they had to use secure Wi-Fi. It was inconvenient for them, even though it was way better for us. So my understanding is that it's covered by the
same. I don't even understand how Apple could do that. Why couldn't I use a tile?
You can. So that's why the article is so badly written.
Yeah.
So there's an NDA on this that's, I haven't seen it. I've talked to people who have seen it, that it's basically the same as the Secure HomeKit NDA and the MFI NDA, which is the hardware stuff is always more stringent than the software stuff because they don't want you to like take it and then just go make your own. So it's got more legal language in it to just protect the IP. But you can use a tile and you can use Find My. That is no problem. What you can't do is use Apple doesn't want to mingle secure with non-secure services. So anybody else can use Find My with their app, but you can use their app instead. But you can't use Find My through Find My and their app at the same time because Apple can't verify the security status. And they want you to know if you're using Find My, there's no tracking, there's no location being stored, and all those things may not be true with another app.
So
basically, you opt out of Find My and you use Find My through that app instead.
Clarify this for me. So we talked about this on iOS today. I want to see if we guessed right, because you're right. It's unclear from the article. I'm a headphone maker. I put Find My in my headphones, which is great, right? So, and I don't know if that means there's a U1 chip in there, so I would hope that would include that, so I could aim my iPhone.
It doesn't have to.
That'd be nice. Anyway.
It can. It just doesn't have to.
Okay. So somehow I'll be able to find my headphones. Does that mean I cannot attach a tile device to those headphones?
No, you can attach a tile.
Of course I can.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
It merely means the manufacturer of those headphones can't build in both tile capability and Find My capability.
No, they can do that too.
What
it means
is that.
Yeah. So the headphone maker has the option of using Find My without the Find My app. You just can't use both together. When you opt into the Find My app, it puts you in a secure state so that, you know, like there's zero tracking, there's none of those things. Apple can't verify that the headphone maker is doing the same thing. So if you turn on the headphone makers, the Find My apps part stops working. It's the same like when you used to do iMessage and you would iMessage a telephone number and it would split into a new thread because Apple no longer could guarantee that the original thread was secure anymore. So it's only with the Find My network. You can use Tile as much as you want and they can use Tile as much as they
want. That seems completely reasonable.
Yes.
It doesn't really limit the headphone manufacturer from doing whatever they want. The only limit is you can't use an insecure system at the same time as using Find My.
Yeah. You have to choose which app you want to own Find My for those headphones, basically.
Oh, so you can even use Find My for the Tile.
I don't know if Tile is going to implement it. If Tile did, theoretically,
then
you could. But you'd have to choose. It's like you can't have two default browsers. You got to pick your default browser.
That makes sense. But you still can pick.
Yes.
Both the customer and the manufacturer.
Yeah.
So I don't see how this is monopolistic in any form or fashion.
No. The whole article's terrible. It gets worse as it goes down.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for clearing that up.
No, it's it's fine. I just like, again, it's I understand there are manufacturers who find some of this inconvenient, and there's never been a headline that the Washington, which I forget which Washington this is,
this
hasn't.
Is the Post.
But we saw the same thing with HomeKit, and the convenience and security are at different odds. And sometimes you sacrifice some convenience to have some security, but you totally get to choose.
It's not helpful for the Post to do this because, consumers want choice, but I know they also want security. And if you couch this as, look, your choice is going to be limited because you want more security, that's a different thing from saying, oh, no, this is all about Apple wanting a monopoly. That's not this at all.
No.
No. All right. So thank you for clearing that up.
No, I was going to say something about it, but I didn't see that many people talking about the article, and I didn't want to give it that much attention. But a lot of people just bought it. Like, they didn't bother to check, and it took me, like, I don't know, I had to read through it. It took me 20 minutes to ask people, you know,
what does this mean?
Who make this kind of stuff.
Yeah, what does this mean? Yeah. Beta 3, developers are going to get beta 3 of iOS 14, or they are getting it now. I got beta 2, public beta, which I have to say I'm very happy with, although there are some weird flaws. For some reason, my clock widget, I was all excited about the clock widget. Doesn't seem to keep time, though.
Whoops.
So it's like, they made a widget, but they didn't connect it to the clock.
Can I show you something really
quick?
Yes. This is my tiny iPhone SE.
Look at that.
Running so the cute beta of iOS 14.
No room for icons.
I think it's so cute.
No room for icons.
Those widgets fit on there. I've thought, oh, it's so bad because you can't put any widgets on, you don't
totally
get to
can
put very many. Yeah. You actually can only fit two rows, though. So I have two small ones on the top row and then one medium one on the second row. You can't fit more than that. Even if they were the small ones, you could still only fit two rows. But what I realized I really like about it is compared to the size of an icon on a standard iPhone, it's so small. And, you know, it's busy, but I can make page after page of nothing but widgets.
Right.
These big widgets.
It's
and
so
that
cute
can be my home screen pages. And they're big and easy to see. And the smart stacks will actually flip.
Yay.
And
yay.
I actually ended up really liking it on the tiny screen as opposed to being frustrated that it doesn't fit more on it. You know, you're a little more selective about what you put on each screen that has a widget because
right
you can only fit two rows of them.
I'll give you a really nice tip that I can't remember where I found it at, but I really like it. So the Siri suggestions widget's nice, especially for the home screen because it suggests apps that you've used recently or you use a lot or are timely. What I didn't know is you could put two Siri suggestion widgets, one above the other, and they show different icons. So I'm thinking that what is actually happening is instead of getting the most eight top picks, I'm getting the 16 top picks, which means this can be my home screen because it's an always changing home screen, but it's the apps that I use the most. I think that's really interesting.
I do that too. And at first I wasn't sure if I'd like it because it does take you, the apps aren't in the same place every time. So
right
it does take you a second to find the app, but they're almost, the app I want is like 99 out of 100 times there. And
yes
it just takes me a second to find it. And that's so much faster than paging or using Spotlight.
Yeah. So I now have three pages. I have that home page with, I have the smart stack, then two Siri suggestions. I don't know if you could fit that on an SE. Maybe you could. I don't know.
Try it while you're talking.
Then the next page is the folders I use by my organization.
Yeah.
So I know if I don't see it right there and I don't want to search, I can switch to a static list of things I want. And then the third, the third page is more widgets. The fourth page is this, whatever they call it, the app library, which I rarely get to. To me, I usually find what I want on page one or two.
Yeah, it's way better than I thought it would be.
It is.
That they've nailed. And I heard you with Micah talking about the smart stack. And I think the thing that's holding it back there is that apps have to, like if the calendar appointment is coming up, it will switch to calendar, but the apps can also alert to a change of status and pushing it. And I think those apps just aren't doing a great job of updating yet. It's supposed to be like a storyline and you can inject into the storyline. And I think they're not doing that like optimally at all yet.
Yeah. And I did take off the clock widget because I could just, it was very confusing.
It's a static image. I don't know why there's a clock widget because it doesn't update every second. It updates when it needs to. It's so weird.
Yeah. It was
so you can use the Siri suggestion widgets on. You can fit the two of them, and it will show you this dynamic.
Isn't
for
that
16.
Wild? Yeah,
I love
and
this.
And you can ban apps from it if you don't like them.
Can you ban apps? Can you say don't ever show me that one?
You can hold down on one of the apps and then say don't ever show this app to me again.
Oh, nice. I'm sorry, but I'm going to banish you, Grindstone. Don't suggest it. That's it. Done. No more suggest, because I'm done with the game. I don't want to see it anymore. Yeah. It shows it because I played an awful lot. So, yeah, I would really love it if that smart stack were a little smarter. That's what we were talking about. Yeah. But I think,
and when third-party widgets come up, like when Carrot Weather is in there and a bunch of other apps, it's going to be delightful.
Yeah, that'll happen.
I keep telling myself that.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Get insulted every time you wake up your phone. Really looking forward to paying for that.
Hey, Dodo, using your phone again? Make that friends.
Let's see. What else is going on? There is a bug. I haven't come across this, but iMore had the story, so I know it's important. Oliver wrote, Apple introduced a bug with 10.15.6 that's killing virtual machines. If you're running virtualization apps, your Mac may crash. VMware says it's Apple's fault. There isn't a workaround yet. I'm sure they'll fix it.
That's why these are betas.
Well, is 10, 15, and 6 a beta? No, that's not Big Sur.
This one wasn't about the beta. Oh.
Yeah, that's Catalina.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Sorry.
That's why we need betas.
Sorry.
Pokemon Go is still crashing on iOS 14, and I'm really salty about it.
I have not gone to Big Sur because I want reliability, but I recently decided, perhaps foolishly, that I should have every photo I've ever taken in Apple's Photos app.
Bless you, Leo.
That seems like it was a bad idea. Over 65,000 photos, and it just crashes every time and reboots the whole machine.
Oh, God.
It's not just like iPhoto, like photos crashed. I come back, you know, because I'm importing them. And I come back, and the machine's been rebooted. It's like, I didn't do that.
It's probably the demon, right? The demon of the photo. I forget its name now, but photo something demon.
It's obviously got, there's too many photos.
I really wish I could get back to a level of trust with my Mac where I will let it have any access to my music or any access to my to my photos or any other piece of media. It seems to be historically they will find a way to screw it up.
What is this is a complete side note, and I know Andy, you're a serious photographer. I don't want to use Lightroom to manage my library anymore. I would love to use iPhotos. That was my thinking, but I have too many photos for iPhotos.
It's not Aperture, though.
It's not Aperture. We know that much. No. Is there a good digital asset management tool for photos on the Mac?
The best one I've encountered is, oddly enough, Adobe Bridge. Where it's not like Lightroom, I'm using for long term storage, just dumping them folder by folder to my server. I keep them backed up as basically folders full of files, basically of images of 64 gig memory cards, and then I can annotate them using Adobe Bridge. Whenever I want to find the picture that I now want to process in another app, I will use Bridge as a front end to that. There's some open source tools that I kind of like too, but none of them, as much as I would like to say, oh, the thing is subscription based software, it's very anti cons. And then I'm trying to find something that works as well as Bridge, and I can't. So okay, I'll say Bridge.
Wasn't Affinity making one or made one? I forget. There was some third party company was making one. But I don't know if it ever shipped.
The Skylum, the Luminar folks said they were going to do a DAM, and they sort of had, but not really. I have to ask my photographer friends what they use, because I know they prefer Macs. I was hoping iPhotos would work, because then it would back up to iCloud. It just seemed like it was a kind of a nice.
Are you sure that it won't work? You just got to give it a little time to actually load them all.
Well, and then it's got another problem, because it seems to be I'm very careful that the EXIF information and the file name and the creation and modification date all match the actual photo date. But
you're just being difficult, Leo.
Photos seems to think, no, everything was July 12th, 2020. It drives me crazy. I found some really nice command line tools. There's JHead. There's EXIF tool. Yeah. There's some really good command line tools that let you fix all this. In fact, I went through every photo. EXIF tool does it for RAWs as well as JPEGs. change the file name to reflect the date of capture, change the creation date and modification date to reflect the date of capture, and then even sorted it into folders, year, month, day folders. It's beautiful. And then I ran Gemini 2, got rid of all the dupes. I mean, I thought I was doing it perfectly, and then iPhotos goes, yeah, it's all July 12th.
Yeah, it's a soup. Gus Mueller has an amazing app for batching photos too. If you ever, people who aren't as adept at the, I'm blanking on the name, but he basically spun it out of Acorn, and it's brilliant for people who aren't as comfortable with the command line.
I love the command line. This is what the command line's made for.
Yes,
but you have to spend some time sussing out weird, command line, attributes and things to make sure it does what. And I, of course, you have to do a big testing thing. But once you do it, once I got it all working, I was able to write a single script that, took all day, went through everything and cleaned it all up beautifully. But, I use Photo Mechanic. I like Photo Mechanic. I own Photo Mechanic. Maybe I should try that as a digital asset management tool.
Weirdly, I've been trying to see what Google Photos can do for me, given that I almost never take I really don't take many personal photos at all. It's mostly just going out and having fun taking pictures. So I don't have to really worry about, I never want Google to have pictures of my kids' faces as they're growing up, which is legitimate for a lot of people. But I can their ability to automatically tag and identify things in photos, and then years later to say, I don't know where I took this picture of. There was like a wheat field behind a white fence, and then just do a search for white fence, and here are 11 pictures, and that's number three. But the other cool thing is, after dumping, like I was trying to take pictures of the comet again and failed. But as usual, just like simply as a backup, backed up all my raw files to Google Photos, and part of the fun is opening the app a day later to see if they made anything magical out of what they found there. Say, oh look, there's a nice picture of two birds, and you can see the ripples in the water, but the birds seem to be still staying still. That's nice. Hey, well, look, here's an animated of. I would love to see Apple do that sort of automatic tagging, because I'm the idea of cataloging my pictures so well that I can always get my hands on exactly what I need if I don't necessarily know what date I took the picture. That's such a big win for me, that the system that allows me to simply describe a photo that I can sort of remember and it will find it for me, that's sort of the defining feature for a photo organizer for me.
It's kind of a missed opportunity, I think, for Apple. They've got they have the ecosystem, they have iCloud. I have photos on everything. I have it on my Apple TV even. It would be so nice if it worked. Sorry, Lauren, go ahead.
I was just going to speak to Andy. They do have a search feature. Maybe you're thinking or describing something different with what Google does, but I could search for fence on my Photos app, and it will show me all pictures that have a fence in it. Is that what you're talking
really?
About?
Really? It does that much?
I'll try it again.
The last time,
Google's probably better at it.
Google's greatest.
He's more diverse. On the photos. Like Apple has pre-existing categories where Google just seems like it's learning faster than you are.
So you could search for dogs, for instance, and you'd get all the dog photos.
Yes, I can't search for iPhone, which just baffles me. But fine, I can search for dogs.
Because you have too many pictures of iPhones. It just gets confused.
Apple would make that a category, right? It's like, is it a square? Does it have a black square inside it? It's fine. It's an iPhone. Yeah. Show it to them.
It's even nice when it does things like whatever the service is, when it can do things like that are more abstract, like, okay, you identified a cat in a photo. I could, a high schooler can use an open source framework and do that. Give me the ability to say a pen and ink drawing of this. So not only do you have to identify a face, but you also have to say, no, this is a photograph taken on an overcast gray day. This is not a drawing. This specifically is a line drawing. Oh, look, there's that Andrew Zorn.
But now you're scaring me, Andy. You're training them to be better than us again.
Is this the app you were talking about, publicspace.net, better finder attributes, Renee? No.
No, it's Flying Meat. Gus Mueller's company makes it, and I'll find it.
This is actually good. It's $17. I bought this, and it does a similar thing to the command line, although a lot easier with a GUI. So you can
Retrobatch. It's Nodal, of course, because it's Gus. So it's
There are a lot of really good tools out there. Yeah. Flying Meat does great stuff.
I like people like him Chris, I'm liking his last name, the people who make Accelerate engineers sort of, you know, they go to the WWDC and make the Apple engineers quake with fear over what they're building.
Oh, this is really nice. This actually does more than EXIF modification. Metadata is in there, but you could do, you know, color effects and all sorts of stuff. Oh, I'm downloading this. That looks great.
He's serious. And he makes a great pizza. So what else do you want?
You can even do
now I want
you
pizza.
Can even script it with JavaScript. Wow.
Well, he's the guy that made the rocket pizza oven that cooked it at like 9,000 degrees or something.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, remember we talked about it a few years ago on the show. He made like an oven that was so hot you could theoretically cook the pizza of the gods.
RetroBatch is $30. RetroBatch Pro is $50. It's all in the Flying Meat store. And, of course, I buy every edition of Acorn. I just think Acorn's the handiest little doohickey out there. Flyingmeat.com. Pay no attention to the website name.
a lot of it.
What else should we talk about? Taylor Swift's
Intel?
Folklore?
Can we talk about Intel?
Yeah. Let's talk about Intel. So... Apple's
The only reason is I found out this weekend that silicon gossip is the same as like beauty YouTube gossip. As soon as the results came in, there was like 800 videos blaming all these different people for what was happening. And this was a power struggle and that person was being forced out. And I never knew this kind of silicon drama existed.
Well, it's big drama because Intel has decided to put off its 7-nanometer process another 2 years. It's a year behind. Might be as long as 2 years. As a result, they have now fired their head of engineering.
Yeah.
Murthy Rendu Chintala is gone, and I presume he was the chief engineering officer taking the fall for the failure to do 7-nanometer. And at this point, Apple's saying, see...
The gossip over the weekend, he came from Qualcomm and they hired a real bunch of really talented people who just suddenly started leaving. And the gossip was that he wanted to be CEO and got passed over and was trying to position himself so there could be no other contenders.
Oh,
I got way too into this.
Who would want to be CEO of Intel at this point?
Oh. I mean, the thing is, I think Ben Thompson had also had some astute analysis on this too, but and so did Ben Beharin, that they were making so much money that it hid problems because server business was so valuable and it was on old nodes and they were reinvesting on old nodes and investors didn't take that as a warning sign because typically they invest on new nodes because those pay forward and the problems just mounted up. Like the 10-nanometer node isn't
bad.
Finished.
It's not good to be successful because it hides potential problems in the organization. Intel was too successful with what they were doing. And as a result, they fell farther and farther behind. And it really does confirm what Apple's strategy was, frankly.
And the market didn't make them pay for it because they were still profitable. They're still going and they're hoping all this stuff is being hidden and the market's still giving them adulation. But then when it stops, it's like hitting a brick wall.
Yeah. Emmy nominations are in and Apple got its first Emmy nominations this morning. The Morning Show. Central Park, you were just talking about how much you like that. Defending Jacob, which I was impressed by. Yeah. The Elephant Queen and the Beastie Boys story, all nominated. Steve Carell nominated for Best Actor in The Morning Show. Jennifer Aniston, Best Actress. Billy Crudup, also from The Morning Show.
He was so good.
He was the best. He was actually the only reason to watch that.
He was way better.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on her name, but the woman that he was harassed was unbelievably good.
Yeah. Mark Duplass, another character. He was the executive producer. Billy and Mark, supporting actor nominations. Guest actor, Martin Short. What was he a guest in? Oh, he was great in that Morning Show.
He was
the sleazy Me Too producer.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. That Steve Carell went to say, and saying, well, it's not that bad, is it? And he said, well, you guys were bad. Mimi Leder, outstanding production design for a narrative contemporary program, outstanding main title design. I disagree with that. I had to skip that main title. And I wish Apple TV Plus had the skip button that Netflix and others have. Because that stupid dot title, do they?
I think they do. Yeah, I don't know if it's always presented, but I'm almost positive I see it.
I don't know.
Because I skipped that thing hard.
What did that have to do with anything? It was just dots.
And it was so long.
It went on and on and on. Central Park, Leslie Odom Jr., Aaron Burr, yeah. Outstanding character voiceover performance. Who does he play in Central Park? I see Josh Gad. He's good in it, but who does Leslie Odom Jr. play? I don't know. Maybe I haven't.
I forget because I went over them.
Is he in the pilot?
And they're not obvious. They're not like you cannot animated. Predict on any given moment who's playing what kind of character.
It's
on that
animated,
show.
So you can't tell. Defending Jacob, outstanding original main title theme music, outstanding cinematography, Home, outstanding music composition, The Elephant Queen, outstanding narrator for Chiwetel Ejiofor. He's wonderful. I love him. Beastie Boys, a lot of nominations for outstanding.
They had me at Beastie Boys. That was so good.
Yeah. Sound editing, sound mixing, nonfiction. So bunch of Emmy nominations. Then the daytime Emmys, they also got nominations. I'm sorry, they won yesterday. I guess the daytimes are earlier. For Ghostwriter and Peanuts in Space, The Secrets of Apollo 10. 17 awards overall in the daytime Emmys, 8 of which were Ghostwriter alone. The TV version of the Emmy Awards are September 20th.
Yeah, see that.
How are they going to do that?
But I mean, this is not just showbiz like news, because there are only a couple of things that you can give to talent to get them to come to your network. One of them is big boatloads of money. I'm sorry, three. The second one is freedom. The third one is prestige
awards.
And those awards, awards don't happen just because. Well, our policy at the network is we just put on the best show, and we're convinced that if the shows are good enough, the Academy will notice them and reward them. No, you have to have a team that knows how to promote and market a series and a talent for those awards, and that's how they're going to be competitive, and that's how they're going to, the next time that there's a major director who decides to sell his next movie to a streaming service and it becomes Apple TV Plus, it's going to be because they are able to provide that kind of total package.
Take this with a grain of salt, but Bloomberg had a story, Apple's new service is off to a slow start in first year. And the problem is Apple doesn't break out. You know, services looks good, more than $16 billion last quarter. We'll find out Thursday, but I bet it'll be, you know, 17, 18. Mm-hmm. It's been a steady growth. And they don't break it out, but an analyst did, at least attempted to, and I don't know how accurate this is. Tony Sakonagi from Sanford C. Bernstein broke down what she thinks contributed to Apple services revenue. App Store, by far the biggest for 2020 for the year. Number two was the licensing deal with Google, which is rumored to be worth more than $11 billion. Then AppleCare, an $8 billion property. That just think about that when you buy AppleCare, you're helping Apple out. So thank you very much.
Not me. I break stuff so often.
I don't buy insurance because I figure it's a profit center, which it clearly is, which means in the long run, it's going to cost you more to use AppleCare than not, right? In the long run, but that might be the very, very
people,
long run.
I am so clumsy.
You're a klutz. Okay. Yeah. If you're a klutz, buy AppleCare. I don't know what other is. iCloud. Apple Music way down toward the bottom.
Like Apple Arcade and all the other services.
Oh, yeah, that's other. Okay. Apple TV Plus way down close to the bottom. The only thing worse, iTunes downloads, which she estimated to be about 1.1.
Well, they gave Apple TV. So, like, I love Mark, and he does a lot of really good articles. This one felt like a roundup of things that, like, we were joking that we couldn't find the news in this because it is just what it is. And they gave away like a year of Apple TV Plus. So it's not going to be profit centered. The whole thing was weird to me.
Yeah, I haven't had to buy Apple. But see, here's the question. I guess for $5, it's worth it. But the problem Apple TV Plus faces is it has no catalog. And there's no new stuff being made. So it's really a challenge to justify that $5 if you've seen it all.
And it will be next year when there is no new stuff. Right. Like their plan, I think, initially was to have a new like blockbuster movie every month right. and a new series debuting every week. And that would carry them over the lack of catalog. It would be like appointment TV. And now nothing's being produced. And I know that's a problem for Netflix and every company, but those companies have catalog content.
They have a lot of content.
That you can go back and watch. Right. Yeah.
I mean, I thought acquiring Greyhound was a smart move for $70 million. I watched it. It was a great movie, yeah. but I don't know if I'd pay the subscription fee for that. You know,
that might be something that they try to do for now, since they can't make new TV shows right now. Continually just try to buy.
But there aren't any new first run movies. I mean, it's really challenging right now.
Well, it's an interesting year because not only these companies that have not yet been able to put these movies in theaters are facing not only that loss of revenue, but now they can't even get them in front of Academy voters.
They're not offering the $20 rentals as much anymore. I have a feeling that was it worked for Trolls World Tour.
It was straight down.
It's not going to work for Tenet, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so Tenet's a really good example. There's a lot of buzz for this. This is the new Christopher Nolan movie. It's a sci-fi sort of, it's not time travel, but it's a couple of problems. First of all, they can't release it really in the US because no theaters are open. So they're going to release it in Europe. But that's a huge risk because of piracy. But also, Nolan wants the plot to be a secret. So this is going to be a huge spoiler. And then if he releases it, when would he release it in the U.S.? I don't know when the movie theaters reopen.
And same with like Black Widow. And like they're juggling dates all Wonder over Woman. The place right
it's
now.
It's a real
and
challenge.
I was listening to John August's podcast this morning, and him and Craig Mazin were thinking there won't be any big scale movie releases until December of next year, which is huge gap.
So it just is my impression that Hollywood decided the $20 rental didn't make sense. Is that confirmed? I mean, I don't see any new ones.
I don't think so. I think it's basically that they realize that they're not going to make their money back on Wonder Woman 84. They're not going to make their money back on Black Widow. And as for the Tom Hanks movie, that is at least the sort of movie where people are going to be sitting at home, nestling around the glowing light of the television set, that would be attractive to them. And when it wasn't a $20 pay-per-view. It was a Apple having their checkbook open and wanting a prestige.
Movie was done. They basically bought it but when they bought the Will Smith movie for even more money, that isn't even made. That movie won't be out till 2021 at the very earliest. So this is challenging for Apple. How do you add new content? Couldn't happen at a worse time for Apple TV Plus.
Plus, we have one theater chain that says they want to open Labor Day weekend, but even if there are people who are silly enough to want to go to a movie theater in late August, I've seen enough video that I know that there are people silly enough to do that. There's a question about whether or not the governors in those states are going to say, okay, our state just got colored from yellow to orange to red. We are going to do mandatory lockdowns again, and now all non-essential businesses are closed. It's a hell of a situation to try to make a buck in.
Or they'll just change the color like some of the states have been doing. And like, wasn't the Marlins now tested positive for COVID? Like this stuff is so tenuous that to be really aggressive, I understand everyone is frustrated and wants to go back to life as normal, but it's not work. Like it's objectively, evidentially not working.
It's definitely problematic. And, you know, it hits the economy in interesting ways. It hasn't hurt Apple's stock, although Thursday is going to be very interesting because, for instance, if services don't go up for this quarter, that I would think would hurt Apple's stock.
But
although, who knows?
I think this year is like it's going to be all asterisks out of the history books. It's like this was 2020. We're not going to. It was such an outlier. We just hope 2021's better, but it's not going to be used for any statistical modeling going forward.
Yeah. I mean,
but it will point out a failure. If you're a streaming service and your audience did not go zooming up, you got a problem with your model. What was the analyst group that did the State of the Streaming Union report like just last week, in which they're showing Twitch is way up, Facebook videos way up, up at least 50% across the board. So when you launch a streaming service in this market and you can't get people to pay attention to you, or if you say that, hey, here is what our plan was for Apple TV. Here is the number of users and hours of video that we thought we'd be streaming by this time after a year. And that curve remained pretty flat while everybody was stuck at home, including kids. That's going to be, or if that number is not up as much as people would think that it was going to be, that's at minimum going to point out that you've got some work to do.
Yeah,
it's concerning when Apple TV's big announcement this week is that they bought a Werner Herzog documentary about media rights. I know, Andy, you love Werner Herzog. I mean,
I love Werner Herzog.
I thought that was John Gruber's documentary. Oh, I'm so confused.
I do.
Not
I
daring too. Fireball. Just
is Herzog playing Gruber? I'm so confused.
It's about media rights. I mean, Mandalorian did really well for Disney Plus, and Herzog did that. So,
yeah.
But still, this shows you the lack of content available out there.
I would argue I'm not particularly interested in most of the documentaries on TV Plus. I will watch a Werner Herzog documentary hands down anytime. Yeah. So there's some fans out there who will jump on that.
It actually sounds pretty cool. He's partnered with a previous collaborator, a professor, Clive Oppenheimer, and Fireball, which is the name of it, promises to help viewers discover how shooting stars, meteorites, and deep impacts have focused the human imagination on other realms and worlds and on our past and future. So, yeah.
Maybe we know there's aliens now, Leo, so this is all just coming together perfectly.
Yep. It's all about the aliens, folks.
I just want them to use that new metal to make the next MacBook so that they're even better.
I just wonder if like Apple is going to allow access to the NFC chip for the chips that the COVID vaccine is going to be implanting in our skin. And I know it's being created by Bill Gates, but I hope they'll put their old animosities aside to make sure there's enough platform.
There was this great meme.
He's joking, like, folks. He's joking.
No, there was this great meme of like Bill
I don't
Gates
want it to be pulled from
COVID.
Twitter.
No, there was this great meme of Bill Gates wanting to cure COVID, and it was saying he just wants to chip you, and then Elon Musk saying, yeah, we're going to put a chip in everybody's head. It's going to be great. It'll cure everything. And everyone's going, go Elon. You know, it's just how to start.
Yeah. Why does Apple charge $130 for their Thunderbolt 3 Pro cable?
Because Thunderbolt's
braided,
expensive. Though.
Yeah.
It's braided. It's like $70 per braid.
It's a 6-foot cable, and if it doesn't work properly, you're kind of screwed. So
good point. That's a long.
Is it optical?
Throw.
I forgot to check.
I don't know
either. It's okay. USB 4 is going to... There was this thing about, like, you know, everyone keeps wanting everything to switch to USB-C, and I forget where it was. Michael Tao linked to it, but this guy's like, I've got all these USB-C devices, and none of the cables work with any of the special fast chargers, and I can't find the right fast charger, and this one has power delivery, and this one doesn't, and this one does the fast charging, and I just make it all go away, and I was thinking, yeah, USB 4 will save all of us, but no. These cables are tyrannical.
No, Steve Wozniak is not going to double your Bitcoin... In fact, he's suing because YouTube has taken so long to pull these scam videos featuring him and others from the YouTube. And Wozniak says, they just ignore me. This has been going on for years.
Yeah. But we put up 2 minutes of Apple footage and they take it down right away.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the complaint also points out that, look, Twitter had a problem and they were right on it. Of course, it helped that it actually almost took down Twitter. But still, as soon as they saw a Bitcoin scam going on, the fact that they were able to lock it down completely. Yes, it wasn't just simply people posting a tweet pretending to be somebody else. It was actually hijacking the accounts. But yeah, if someone like Steve Wozniak can't get the attention of the person to say that, hi, someone is saying that I'm giving away free money and it really is harshing my mellow. Could you please knock this thing down? And even this guy cannot get the attention and action made, what can a creator who's saying, hi, a piece of public domain, a piece of audio from the YouTube library of static has gotten my entire channel copyright claimed by a Chinese company. Could you please give me all my content back? And you hear nothing back for 4 months. that shows that there is a serious problem in the production, in the work chain of how YouTube handles complaints. I hope this suit goes forward.
Well, it might not have much hope. Woz's wife Janet says she's contacted YouTube numerous times since May about the scam. Problem is, YouTube is protected by Section 230. So, according to Ars Technica, legal experts think this is...
It's a bad look, though. Like, I think the publicity will be far more effective.
I think that's the main thing, and I'm sure Woz got that advice, yeah.
Yeah. Because it wasn't a headline until this happened, so good on Woz.
They'll win in the court of public opinion, if not in the actual courts. And, if nothing else, at least he's pointed out that that's a scam. That's not me. I didn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you know, according to iMore, there's an entire subreddit where people share photos of their Apple boxes. Reddit, is there anything it can't do?
I know. In my closet, I probably have at least 10 Apple boxes.
It
so
seems
I get
a shame
it.
To throw there's, them away. It really does.
Georgia took mine and uses them to organize drawers.
Oh,
Georgia does amazing things with Apple boxes.
What a great
she
idea.
Uses them as little organizers. It's brilliant. Yeah. She's so smart.
Does she cover them with contact paper to make them look pretty?
They no, look I think pretty just in without the drawers it. As sturdy dividers, yeah. And
they are
she has,
pretty
like,
sturdy.
Things in them.
You know, I actually have bought those dividers. Now I'm in throwing away my Apple boxes. I should really keep them. Yeah.
Can I make one suggestion though? I think that they're beautiful boxes, and you keep them, and maybe you cover them with paper so they don't look quite so reused. But because they're two good boxes not to hold on to. But how many times has each of us witnessed somebody who's just bought their I just bought my new $1,000 iPhone, like, and then they take off the shrink wrap and they expect a loose fitting box like anything else, and when the top doesn't come off like at the minute, they start shaking it, and then suddenly everything goes flying and including their $1,000 phone.
Yeah.
They need to have like just a little bit of a hole, like airflow, so that it will break that suction seal, because the fit is so tight and so beautiful. Because I the last time I saw that happen was actually like a month before lockdown. It was that someone must have bought a new iPhone at the Apple store that was near the train station and couldn't wait to set it up.
Oh.
And so all waiting for the train and just went ka-plunk and just it was that. Like frozen in space saying, I didn't just do what I think I just did. But the longer I delay before picking this up off the floor, the longer I delay finding out the screen is broken before I even got to turn it off.
So depressing.
Yeah.
It should be like,
do you know the end result of that, whether or not the screen broke? I feel like we need resolve.
I think it was okay, but the thing is, it was a hard floor. So now you got to think that
scratches,
like the first. Well, not just that, but like the first time he says, "Oh, and this is waterproof to like 3 feet," and like no, well, it was water resistant, and that was also reliant on not on like screws and gaskets, but on adhesives and seals that kind of might have like sheared a little bit when every time you drop a phone and you think it was okay, chances are it just did just a little bit of damage, so that you're now the countdown is you've got two more drops before something cracks, because you started like this tiny little stress fracture that you can't see. So but that's just the look on everybody's face when, because it's such a natural thing to happen, or if you want to make it even classier, put that like red ribbon that you sometimes see where you lift up the ribbon, it will actually separate the bottom from the top.
Oh yeah,
then you'll have people having a subreddit about the saving their ribbons.
I always feel guilty when I'm breaking down those boxes for the recycler.
They're just /r/Inotto. Let's do it.
So depressing. So I thought this was a little odd. I think a lot of things are odd. I think it's odd that Major League Baseball is attempting a season.
Yeah.
I thought it was really weird when CES said, oh, yeah, we're going to have CES in January.
Yeah.
Never mind. CES has decided to go all online only in 2021.
That's the harsh sound of reality falling on them that you hear, Leo.
They had all sorts of plans for protecting attendees, and they're going to have limited attendance and all sorts of things.
COVID laughs at their plans.
Yeah.
It's like we've seen this over and over again. Yeah. I forget what it was, but someone had a gathering over the weekend. It was like 40 people, and now they want to have the same gathering. Like 40 people got infected, and they wanted the same gathering. It's the definition of insanity.
Gary Shapiro talking to VentureBeat. He's, of course, the CTA of I mean, the CEO of CTA, the Consumer Technology Association, that puts this show on every year. He said as month by month went by, it was our hope somehow this would resolve by January. But the assumption is there will not be a vaccine that will be widely available and considered safe by January. At a board meeting, the issue was, what is the right thing to do? We're making the decision based on the right thing to do, not on the best financial thing. I'm sure it's going to really hit them hard. They already have, I'm sure, purchased the hotel rooms.
They've already got Las Vegas hard.
Yeah, it's Las Vegas hard, too. It's 180,000 people who won't be going.
Yeah, it's hard to translate these things. Last week was supposed to be San Diego Comic-Con, like the biggest Comic-Con, and the oldest one. And they decided, of course they canceled it a couple months ago, but they decided to, we'll do a virtual Comic-Con where we have like a virtual Hall H. We'll have like the big panels and the big sessions, but now it'll be just like streamed live. And the numbers were like astonishing. There were like 14,000 people, maybe, watching, which at an event that is supposed to be like anybody who's vaguely interested in comics or pop culture events would be interested in. That's not what Renee gets, and he doesn't have a $200 million movie opening next year.
Montreal finally made a mask law and they started enforcing it. And then the Quebec government said, oh, it's okay. We'll have gatherings of up to 250 people indoors now. It's no problem. And the whole thing is just baffling to me.
Well, go for it. Yeah. Watch for the surge. Google has announced that it's going to let employees continue to stay home until the summer of next year.
Good on Google.
Twitter said you never have to come back. Apple seems to be bringing employees back. I wonder, though, if they'll rethink that.
It's the people. My understanding is it's the people that have to do like specific, like if you're using the CNC machines in the design lab, that's very hard to move to home. But they're doing everything they can to check people and keeping very minimal people and not bringing back people who don't have to be there.
How was Pokemon Go Fest? The virtual Pokemon.
It was super interesting. I had to they refused to fix the stupid bug. And usually I say you can't complain about software on beta devices, but this is so stupid and they could fix it so easily. So I had to use an old device to do it, but it was pretty well done. Basically there was just a ton of stuff and there were tasks that you could do along the way. And I played with my godkids for a few hours on Saturday and we all had a lot of fun.
I honestly think that they should have done this ages ago. It's kind of cool to be able to play with people. I'd like to play with you, Renee, but I'm not going to be in Montreal.
Well, we can do remote raids now. So like if you're at a raid, you can invite me and I can jump on with you. It's so much better than what they were doing before.
Yeah. This is a change they should make. So it still doesn't work on iOS 14 though.
No, the same reason your banking apps don't work on some people's banking apps don't work on iOS 14. I don't want to get too far into it, but it's so dumb.
My banking app works, but it says it looks like you're on a jailbroken iPhone.
Yeah.
Are you sure you want to keep doing this?
It's a really bad SDK that they shouldn't. Well, I'm going to get in a whole. We've seen apps won't even launch when the Facebook SDK has a bad line feed in it. So
Pokemon
please stop
Go
using that garbage.
Starts and then closes immediately.
Yeah.
Is that the same thing? What is going on?
I believe so. I don't know how much I can say about it or not, but my understanding is that they're using the same sort of dodgy stuff that those banking apps are using, and they really shouldn't be.
Ah, so by using deprecated or unofficial SDKs or APIs. Well, that's always a dumb idea.
Yes.
Don't.
And they could literally fix it. All those banking apps could fix it. So it makes me salty.
Yeah, it makes me salty too. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, your picks of the week. Prepare them, if you will. As you know, our show is brought to you, it always has been, by CashFly. That's our content delivery network that's been an innovating content delivery since 1999. I just got an email this week. I get one pretty regularly from other CDNs saying, hey, you know, you ever have trouble? We could help you. And all I can say is, you know what? CashFly has been 100% perfect for 10 years. I'm not going anywhere, buddy. CashFly is the fastest global throughput CDN. Faster, a lot faster than any other way of delivering because it's a CDN, but it's faster even than their competition. And now it's more affordable. One of the things I've always liked about CashFly is it saves us from having to worry about spikes. Our downloads of the podcast are very spiky. You know, we'll get a lot of hits tonight for MacBreak Weekly, and then it'll slowly trail off. It's very spiky, and the next Tuesday, up it again. And I, the last thing I'd want to do with a CDN is be constantly checking to make sure I didn't go over the cap or whatever. CashFly spreads your usage out over a year. So they bill you monthly, the same thing every month. So you know exactly what you're going to pay. You don't have to worry about going through some arbitrary limit. I just love that. And now they're even saving me money on transfer from my origins to the content delivery network. They call it 100% Cash Shield. It's a new feature that's going to save you drastic reduction in data transfer fees from places like AWS's S3, which is where we store our stuff, other cloud storage origins, by increasing your cache hit ratio to 100%. To understand why this works, you need to understand how a CDN works. You know, they're caching my podcasts or your apps or your stream or whatever at the endpoint near your customers because they have servers all over the world. But if you get a cache miss, if somebody goes to a site and it doesn't have that data, it will have to go to your origin and download it. And if your cached items are being evicted for large one-off requests, it can cost you a fortune in data transfer out fees. I love 100% Cache Shield because it is dedicated storage on CashFly just for you, keeps your data and content closer to customers. You don't have to worry about traffic over other companies' networks. You could purchase as much space as you want. Your data will be fetched from 100% Cache Shield rather than your origin. So shielding reduces origin spend, in many cases by thousands a month, but it also guarantees no cache misses. And a cache miss means buffering or a pause or a halt. It slows down download speeds. It's terrible. Look at all the companies that use CashFly. They're just the best. If you're streaming video, you can reach global audiences of any size with nary a hiccup, no buffering, hyper-fast download speeds, low latency, a scalable solution for gaming. And of course, we love it because you may not know it, but you get our podcasts fast without ever a problem. And that is important to me. I don't want any 3 a.m. calls. I want to make sure that when this show is done, it gets to you as fast as possible. CashFly's global throughput performance dominance ensures any cache misses, if you use 100% Cache Shield, are delivered 5 times faster than from your origins. We're big fans. You will be too. Right now, if you want to know how much CashFly can save, bring your bill, your CDN bill and your usage trends to CashFly. And they'll tell you. No hard sell, no pressure. It's just for you Twit listeners. Go to twit.cashfly.com. We deliver petabytes of data every month over CashFly. More than 1 million downloads a week over CashFly with never a problem. It is the most amazing thing. See if you're overpaying 20% or more for your CDN. twit.cashfly.com. Thank you, CashFly. twit.cashfly.com to learn more. Somebody in the chat room asked me, I'm going to start the picks of the week with my iPhone case. I forgot I've been showing this for the last few weeks. I've been using it, but I never mentioned what it was. It is a Bellofino leather iPhone case, a wallet from Pad and Quill. They make beautiful leather stuff. This is I like keeping my driver's license and my cash and my one or two credit cards with my phone so that I don't have to carry a wallet when I'm out and about. I just carry my phone with me and I'm going to have it here. Comes in a variety of colors. I got the brown with kind of a dark green on the inside. But the other thing I really like about this is they offer for a small additional fee straps, colorful straps. So I'm using the orange right now, but I can also do is baby blue, yellow, and black. I bought the straps to go with it. I think it was an extra $10. They're very easy to change. And it's kind of like your watch band, Renee. It gives you a little change of pace anytime you want. This is a really nice iPhone case. The case that the phone is in detaches, so you can, if you want it for wireless charging or just want to carry your phone without your wallet. I never detach it. It's got, in fact, I'm not going to do it now. It's got a 3M kind of sticky thing on the back. That is the only knock on this. If you don't detach the case, you can't wirelessly charge. But I think the convenience for me of having a wallet, I like wallet cases. And this is, the leather is so nice and wears so well. A little pricey. It's about $90. But that's my pick of the week. The Pad and Quill Bellofino leather iPhone case. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week. Oh, you're muted.
Inner Alex Lindsay here.
Start over.
Sorry. I'm channeling my inner Alex Lindsay here. I'm representing for him.
Oh, I almost picked this. You're crazy, man.
It has been an absolutely, like, as terrible as 2020 has been, it is my least favorite DC Universe movie by far. As terrible as it's been, the summer has been amazing for cameras. We saw the R5 and R6 from Canon. We saw a 12K camera from Blackmagic, which is just ludicrous. And now we have Sony's new entry, A7S3.
That's right.
Their naming conventions aren't easy. But yeah, A7S3. And it is a lot of things that people like the Canon cameras were great, but they had overheating and hard stop issues when you're doing 8K, 4K, 120, you know, even 4K 60, 4K 30. This so far, nobody's found those hard limits. I think if you start doing a lot of 4K 120 in HEVC, it'll tap out after an hour. But it's got everything every Sony camera enthusiast has been asking for: a properly articulated flip sideways screen, like nature and humans prefer. It's got good codecs. You can do 10-bit. You can do RAW. It is capped at 4K, and some people are complaining there's no 6K downsampled or 8K, but really, so what? And it's 12 megapixels, which some people are also complaining about. But the results, like, it's not pixel quantity, it's pixel quality.
Yeah, this
matters.
Is not for a still shooter. This is for somebody who wants to do video in low light. I'm an A7 user.
Yes.
If you want megapixels, you go with the A7R. But if you want great video, and by the way, this shoots Apple ProRes.
Yes. And even the 12 megapixels are really good. I saw a lot of side by sides with 48 megapixel sensors, and this looked better in some of those circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
Because the quality of those pixels are so good.
They're four times bigger than the megapixels in a higher, the high res full frame sensor. 12 megapixels, that means big pixels.
Yeah, and it just checks all the boxes. I saw some of the early videos go up. Gerald Undone, which is a really good YouTube channel, gives it like an incredibly in-depth, nerdy, geeky review. Even brings out the dynamic range machines to measure how many stop. And there's a ludicrous amount of dynamic range. And he figured out it's got dual ISO. So it's like it's really good. I think it's like 670. Then it gets noisy until you hit 1600. Then it's clean again and goes up. It looks like an astounding camera. It's not a cine camera, but it's only like $5,000 if you get like a bunch of the accoutrements. Like they have an XLR mount and a bunch of other things. And if you don't need the very quirky specific things about a cine camera, this is like as high-end prosumer. You could probably launch a documentary series off the back of this camera.
Yeah.
And well.
I have to say it's an interesting, if you want 8K, you're going to get the R5, the Canon.
Yeah.
If you want more megapixels, you're going to get the Canon. You have to have more megapixels for 8K. But low light is pretty important. And the A7S has always been in a low light market.
And sustained shooting. Like if you are shooting long form things, like you're doing a documentary, you're doing something where you can't guarantee you'll be under 20 minutes, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, they have special cooling, so they don't have the same problem the R5 had.
And all our nerd friends were ordering like two or three of them immediately this morning because that's what they do.
It's only, almost 4,000 for the body.
Yeah, but I mean, it is expensive when you look at like a consumer camera, but it is so inexpensive for what it does that if you're in, like if you're, again, like you said, it's more video than it is still shooting, but if you're in this racket, it is an unbelievable, it looks to be an unbelievable value.
I love my A7S. I really do. It's a great video camera.
And this is more to love. It's just literally more to love.
Yep.
And they fixed the menu system, Leo. Like people have been begging for that.
Well, I love the articulated viewfinder. I really would like to, that's one big improvement, I have to say. And 12 megapixels, we make fun of, this megapixel race, but 12 megapixels is still pretty darn good. It's 4K.
And 10-bit, it does 18-bit RAW out through the HD. It's got a full-size HDMI, 18-bit RAW out. It does get down to 12-bit when you record it. Like you need to record it on an external mod, like a Ninja or something, but that's still phenomenal. And it's got S-Log, I think S-Log 3 and S-Log 2. It ticks all the boxes.
Very nice pick. Wish I could afford it.
I know. I have Canon, so I literally can't afford it. I have to get all my lenses and stuff again.
I can really recognize
talent.
I don't know. I have to really decide if I were going to shoot more video between the R5 and this. I just don't know. This is really impressive.
Or 12K Black Magic, Leo.
Yeah, that's the other choice. We were talking about that the other day. This is nice and compact, though. I think they've really done a nice job.
Andy, and people are arguing, and they shouldn't be brand loyal. Don't care who makes the camera. Get the best camera for you. Right. Like, they're all good.
The problem is when you invest in glass.
Yes.
You kind of have to stick with whatever you invested in.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I have glass for a variety of systems. Are you sad, Annie? The Olympus has announced they're killing the OMD line, which is very sad.
That wasn't the announcement.
They sold it.
But Olympus had two major businesses. One was like medical optics. The other was the camera business. The camera business had a couple of bad years, and they decided to sell it to the same company that bought Sony's Vaio notebook business. And all the information that I have at hand is not that they're going to sell it off for parts or they're going to stop making. Everything is still going to go on. Everybody who's still an engineer at Olympus is still going to be an engineer building these cameras.
Oh, good.
But it's just going to be fortunately, again, the company that bought it is not known for, again, well, here's some real estate.
Vaio is not, they did not do well by the Vaio brand, shall we say.
Yeah, but the thing is that the thing to know is that it's not like when like Apple buys a hardware company and then suddenly the hardware company stops making hardware. Yeah. Or when Polaroid, which used to be like one of the major tech engineering brands of the 70s, and now the company who bought it basically wanted the logo they could stick on any kind of piece of like crap that they get from any OEM. All I will say about it is that I was pretty excited about the third generation OMD EM1. And I had decided like earlier this year that I'm going to put some money away and buy one early next year. And I don't see any reason to change that.
Oh, good.
That decision right now.
All right.
So.
And the nice thing about Micro Four Thirds glass is, there's a lot of choices out there. A lot of choices.
Yeah, And the other thing, I mean, since we're talking about cameras, both the Sony and other things, this isn't like when Palm decided to stop making phones or when Windows decided to make Windows phones, where, okay, well, where are you going to get software from now on and where are you going to get accessories and what is going to work on whatever network? The thing is, like, even if I love my OMD EM1, absolutely love it. It's the perfect camera for me, so much so that even though this will be like a $1,600 expense that I could be putting into like buying a full frame camera, I don't want a full frame camera. So the thing is, if I buy this model, this third generation hardware, and it lasts me 5, 6, 7 years, I'm perfectly happy. And the body that I bought 5 years ago, and I've beaten the hell out of it. It's like a beloved science fiction book where you know how much someone loves it by the fact that the spine is all broken and there's those coffee stains everywhere. You can see all the places where like it's been bumping against my hip. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. I've used it in the rain. I've dropped on the sidewalk a couple times and it works perfectly fine still. So that's just to underscore what Renee said. Like you can drive yourself nuts looking at, we took like 18 different spectrograms based on the surface of the. It's like, okay, the fact of the matter is, put this thing in your hand, which one feels like an extension of your creativity and which one is just a barrier, a piece of gadgetry that you have to figure out. And for me, the OMD EM1 is just no obstacle whatsoever.
What's your pick of the week, Andy?
Mine is a long-term favorite. I have so many of these. This is the Western Digital Easy Store USB 3 external hard drive. I actually bought two over the weekend. One is still in the box underneath me. And I'm going to count. I've got one, two, three. I've got one attached. I've got another one attached to my NAS as a backup. This new one is going to be the one that I've attached to my NAS is like the nightly backup. This one is going to be the weekly backup that's air gapped, meaning that once a week I reattach this, do the backup. When the backup is done, unplug it. So now nothing can possibly change the data that's on this. And the other one is just to be in the box and waiting in my closet for that time when I'm in a dire emergency. That can be, but all my problems will be solved if I have a fresh 8 terabytes of storage that I can basically put everything onto or do a full backup of an entire desktop PC onto. What I love about these drives is they're in a whole bunch of capacities. Right now, the sweet spot for this drive is 8 terabytes. They're really durable. They use the same mechanisms that Western Digital puts oftentimes in their server machines. These are kind of famous because oftentimes people who run NASs will buy them and shuck them. They'll just like take them apart to get at the mechanism inside and adapt them for use in a NAS because in many cases they're actually really, really, really spec much better than a consumer external drive. And they're really, really cheap. One of the reasons why I wind up buying so many of them is that you can easily buy them for about $150. They often go on sale for $130. And sometimes, particularly on Black Friday sort of deals, they go for even cheaper than that. I subscribe to a subreddit called Build a PC Sales. Like, there are a whole bunch of subreddits are for like looking for tech bargains. And so when at 4:30 in the morning I see that, oh, this is the Western Digital 8 terabyte is on sale for $119 at Best Buy, that's when, okay, I've been waiting for this for 4 or 5 months. I'm going to buy a couple so I have one for the purpose that I'd intended it for and one standing by for when I need one to go for. I can't complain about them. They're exactly what I want for a desktop drive. Again, durable, very, very convenient. Again, on my main desk by there, I've got a bunch of these just like books on a shelf. And the fact that I just keep buying more and more of them just shows you how much faith I have in them. So just hold on and wait for them to go on sale, because they do go on sale rather regularly.
Awesome. Ms. Lori Gill, you're going to wrap it up with your pick of the week.
Get out your wallet.
Oh, boy. I always buy everything you recommend. What is that? It's a magic RR mug.
It's a Rene Ritchie mug, and it's really nice. Mug-wise, it's just a mug, but the colors and the design.
The Rene-ness of it.
It's gorgeous. I love this color. I love the design. As soon as Renee got this design, I fell in love with it. The logo is fantastic.
It is a great logo, yeah.
But the coloring, too, it's like this dark blue, almost black, but not quite, on top of this sort of orange and white. It's so gorgeous. So even if you don't even watch Renee's videos, it's a good-looking mug. People are going to ask you about it.
At a mere $15, buy five. Why not?
Yeah.
Available at standard.tv/collections/Rene-Ritchie. Very nice. Yeah. Who did that RR again? That's a really good logo.
Simon Buckmaster at Forgotten Towel on Twitter. He does all the Standard and Nebula stuff. He's done a lot of the Relay stuff too, I think. He's just beyond fantastic.
Really nice. Very well done. Thank you, everybody. We have concluded this gripping edition of Mac Break Weekly. Rene Ritchie is at youtube.com/Rene Ritchie. Should I be plugging Nebula, or what do you, I mean,
it's entirely up to you. We're still, it just hit 100,000 subscribers this nice. Weekend. So we're super, super happy about it. Bootstrap, no funding, no VC, no marketing, just a bunch of creators trying to have a silly dream of making content without the tyranny of the algorithm.
Very nice.
To be afraid of.
Wonderful.
I also want to apologize, Leo, if I was choppy today, but the Skype helper is using 250% of my CPU right now. Geez. And I have no idea how to stop it.
What is the Skype helper? Why do you need
I have no
that?
Idea. I've never seen it's it not before. Helping. Now it's in my activity monitor spiking to 250% of CPU usage. Skype helper renderer.
I have tasked our engineering staff to find a replacement for Skype. This is an exercise in futility we go through every few years. We've yet to find something better, but it's getting worse and worse and worse. I just don't know.
Oh, my goodness. I've got it, too. So, Renee and Andy, both of you, I noticed that all three of us were, like, lagging. We were having lag today.
Yeah.
And they must have updated or something, and all three of us are experiencing the same issue. I just checked Activity Monitor. I'm having the same thing.
It was using more than Final Cut, so I quit everything else on my system, and it's still lagging. 167% of CPU now. 87 threads.
Yeah.
2.3% of GPU.
Yeah, that's pretty insane.
Yeah, there you go. 276% of CPU on me.
There is an article. The chat
Google Chrome 2.9%. It's saying, see, it's not always
my worse than Chrome.
It's other processes.
Yeah.
There is an article on Medium that Chatham sent me from last year, Undercover Chris, Skype helper high CPU usage, and there's a fix. I don't know if anybody's tried it. So it's complicated. I won't go through it, but
at least we now understand like where it's coming from. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not new either. That's
anyway, I apologize on behalf of Skype.
I'm still going to use this as an excuse to upgrade my hardware, though.
Yeah, just get a faster.
I'm on a 16-inch MacBook Pro, almost maxed out, and it's bringing it to its knees. Final Cut doesn't do that. There's no reason.
don't ruin this for me. I definitely need to buy all new Mac hardware and a new screen.
You do,
and a hat.
Apple Silicon Mac hardware.
That's Andy Inaka. When are you going to be on WGBH next?
As usual, Friday at 1 p.m. Tune in live or later at WGBHnews.org or 89.7 on your FM dial.
Lovely. INATKO.com. Also, Inatko on the Twitter. Lori Gill is managing editor at iMore.com. Appaholic. She's doing the finger stretching exercises, getting ready for Thursday. The Apple results. We will have those for you next Tuesday. Anything you want to plug, Lori? What are you doing these days? Anything you smoked recently?
Yeah, we've been smoking lots. Every single weekend we smoke something.
I love my Traeger. I thank you for it every week.
I love it too. It opened up a whole new world for me for real.
Smoking meats.
Jealous. Yep. So hungry.
We can make some biltong for you anytime. You just ask.
Yeah.
I mean, thank you, that'd be a good guy.
We do Mac Break Weekly. Let's see, Tuesdays around 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. If you want to stop by and watch as we do the show, you can. There's live stream audio and video available at twit.tv/live. Chat room is chatting along with us at irc.twit.tv. You're always welcome there 24/7. On-demand versions of the show available at the website, twit.tv/mbw. They're also on YouTube. They're also, frankly, on your voice assistant. You just say, hey, Echo, play Mac Break Weekly. Sometimes you have to say podcast. Sometimes you have to say tune in. I don't know why, but keep trying it till you find the syntax. And that way you'll hear the latest episode whenever you're in the mood. Better idea, though, get a podcast application. Pocket Casts, we like that a lot. Overcast, we like that a lot. Google has one. Apple has one. Stitcher, Slacker, Spotify. And subscribe. That way, you'll get the show the minute it's available automatically. You don't even have to think about it. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Back to work, though, now, because break time is over. Bye-bye.
Want more TWIT? Well, check out Smart Tech Today. It's at twit.tv/STT. It's the show where Matthew Casinelli and I cover everything there is to know about smart tech. It's automation. It's connected devices. It's smart home. It's all those goodies and so much more. We get the news. We get the latest devices. We do reviews. Everything. You got to check it out. twit.tv/STT for Smart Tech Today.